Miriam, what am I doing here? I want to be home with you. I need you. Why did you ever send me on this mad quest? The girl straightened and retied her short cap. She turned and waited for a wagon to pass before she crossed the street. Paul caught a brief glimpse of her face, and his heart stopped. Angel. At first he couldn't believe it was really her. It had to be his imagination, putting her face over another after all these weeks of looking. She hurried across the street and walked quickly away from him. Pushing his hat up, he stared after her, wondering if he had seen right. He must have made a mistake. It couldn't be her, not dressed like that. But he followed anyway, just to get another look. The young woman walked briskly, her head up. Men noticed her all along the way. Some tipped their hats as she passed by. Others whistled and made bold propositions. She didn't pause or speak to anyone. She clearly had a destination. When she reached the heart of the city, she entered a grand bank on a main corner. Paul waited outside in the cold mist for half an hour before she came out again. It was Angel. He was sure of it. She was with a well-dressed gentleman, a man considerably older and more prosperous than Michael. Paul's teeth clenched. He watched as the two spoke together for several minutes, and then the man kissed her cheek. High-class clientele, Paul thought cynically. And for all her prim and proper clothing, Angel was as brazen as ever. No decent woman would let a man kiss her on a public street, not even on the cheek. Miriam's words haunted him. You've always judged her, and so wrongly. Paul's mouth pressed tight. Miriam wasn't here to witness this scene. She didn't know anything about women like Angel. He had never been able to convince her. She had never quite believed in the existence of a girl called Angel and what she'd done in a brothel in Paradise. You're not even talking about the same person, she said. But he knew what Angel was, even if Miriam and Michael never faced up to it. What on God's green earth had they ever seen in that worthless woman to love her with such solid, unchanging devotion? He would never understand it. He followed Angel to a simple two-story clapboard building not far from Portsmouth Square. There was a sign on the front door. He had to cross the street to read it. House of Magdalena. There it was, printed for any man to see. He had known it all along. Now what was he going to do? Even if he told Miriam, she would never believe it, and convincing her would only hurt her more. Dejected and angry, Paul walked for a long time. It was Angel's fault he was in this situation. She had been a destroyer ever since he first laid eyes on her. First she'd come between him and his money. He had thrown away gold once in a vain attempt to spend half an hour with her at the palace. Then she came between him and Michael. Now she was coming between him and his wife. He spent the night in a cheap hotel. He ordered supper in the dining room and then couldn't eat it. When he went to bed, he couldn't sleep. He kept imagining Miriam's tear-streaked face. You never even tried to understand her, Paul, and you don't understand now. Sometimes I wonder if you ever will. I understand, all right, and I want the witch out of my life forever. I wish she was dead, buried, and forgotten. Paul slept fitfully, and awakened long before dawn with the decision firm in his mind to go back to the valley. He would lie to Miriam. There was no other way to spare her. He would tell her that he had looked everywhere and couldn't find Angel. Or he could tell her he found out Angel had died of fever or the pox. No, not the pox. Diphtheria, pneumonia. Anything but the pox. Or he could say she left for the East Coast and the ship went down, going around the Horn. That would be believable. But he could never tell her he had seen her go into a brothel a few blocks up from the docks. Sickened at having to lie at all, he packed his things. All the weeks he had gone without his wife's sweet company because of Angel made him seethe. He would think of some way to convince Miriam it was a lost cause before he got home. He had to. On his way to the ferry that would take him across the bay, he began to have doubts. Miriam would want to know the name of the ship. She would want to know the people to whom he'd spoken. She would want to know 100 details he would have to make up. One big lie he could manage, but not a tapestry of smaller ones. Standing in the heavy fog, a chill started from within Paul. It wouldn't work. No matter what story he conjured up, Miriam would know. She always knew. Just as Michael had known what had happened between Paul and Angel on the road, without a word about it ever being spoken aloud. Furious, he went back to the clapboard building. Seeing no reason to knock, he walked right in. Before him was a small foyer, sparsely furnished with two benches and a hat rack. There were no hats on it. In fact, there was no one to ask him what he wanted, let alone whom. He heard women talking. Removing his hat, he entered a large sitting room and froze. It was filled with women, mostly young, and all staring right at him. Heat filled his face. Several things came to him at once. The girls were all sitting in straight-backed wooden chairs. There were no men in the room other than himself, and the place looked more like a classroom than a brothel parlor. They were all wearing the same somber gray dresses that Angel had been wearing yesterday. Angel wasn't among them. A tall woman standing before the others smiled at him. Her brown eyes were alight with amusement. "Are you lost, sir? Have you come to mend your ways?" The younger women laughed.
I beg your pardon, ma'am, he stammered, confused and embarrassed. What was this place?
He thinks this is a hotel, one of the girls said, looking at the pack slung on his back. The others laughed. Oh, I bet he thinks this is something else altogether, don't you, honey? Another said, looking him up and down. Someone laughed. He's blushing. I haven't seen a man blush since 49. Ladies, please, the tall woman said, quieting them. She put down the piece of chalk. She brushed the white dust from her slender fingers and walked toward him. I'm Susanna. She held out her hand, and he took it without thinking. Her fingers were cool, her grip firm. How may I help you?
I'm looking for someone. Her name's Angel. At least she used to go by that name. I thought I saw her come in here yesterday afternoon.
Paul? He turned sharply and saw her standing in the doorway. She looked surprised and dismayed. Come with me, please, she said. He followed her down a hall and into a small office. She took a seat behind a big oak desk. Papers were strewn over it, as were several books. On one corner was a plain brown hat box with a slot in it. "Please sit down," she said. He sat and looked around at the simple, pristine setting. He couldn't make any sense of it. Why would a madam have an office more suited to a nun? What sort of classes were being conducted in the other room? Arithmetic problems had been written on the board. But now that he faced Angel again, he didn't think to ask. The old animosity was back in full force. If it weren't for her, he would be home with Miriam. Angel was looking at him with her same directness, but she was different somehow. He looked back at her coldly, trying to figure out what it was. She was still beautiful, so incredibly beautiful, but she had always been that. Beautiful, cold, and hard as stone. He frowned. That was it. The hardness. It was gone. Now there was a softness about her. It was in her blue eyes, her faint smile, her quiet manner. She's serene. The thought stunned him, and he shook it away. No, not serene. She just doesn't feel anything at all. She never did. He remembered the day on the road. He couldn't exercise it. He wanted to say something and couldn't think of a word. He was angry, resentful, depressed. But he kept reminding himself he wasn't here for himself. He was here for Miriam.
The sooner he got things said, the sooner Angel could refuse to return, and he could leave in good conscience. Angel spoke first. "You're looking well, Paul." He had the oddest feeling she was trying to put him at ease. Why would she want to do that?
"Yes, so are you," he said, sounding stiffly polite. It was true. Even in gray she looked good, better than ever. She was one of those women who would be beautiful even in her 60s, a devil in disguise.
"It was a shock seeing you," she said.
"Yes, I'm sure it was."
Her eyes searched his face. "What brings you to the house of Magdalena?"
Let her sweat. "Whose house is this?"
"Mine." She didn't elaborate. She waited for him to say something.
"I saw you on the street yesterday and followed you here."
"Why didn't you come in?"
"I didn't want to interrupt anything," he said. "Do you still go by Angel?"
He couldn't get the edge out of his voice, and he couldn't understand the look in her eyes, as though every word he said grieved her deeply. Why should it? Nothing had ever grieved her before. It was another act.
"I still go by Angel," she said. It seemed appropriate.
Again that directness. Straightforward, to the point, yet gentler in some way than he could ever remember her being.
"You look different," he said, and glanced around. "I expected you to be living in higher style than this."
"Lower, you mean?" She looked amused, not defensive. He let a sneer show on his face.
"Nothing changes, does it?"
Angel studied him. He was right, in one sense, at least where his hatred of her was concerned, not that he didn't have enough reason. Still, it hurt.
"No, I guess not," she said quietly. "It's understandable."
She had so much to answer for.
She looked away. She couldn't stop thinking about Michael. She was afraid to ask about him, especially from this man who loved him so much and hated her with equal intensity.
What was he doing here? Paul didn't know what to say. He sensed he had hurt her. She sighed and looked at him again, and he wondered if she was as calm as she seemed, if anything really touched her. It was one of the things he had despised about her. No arrow he shot had ever drawn blood.
"Do you ever go back to the valley?" she asked.
The question caught him off guard.
"I live there."
"Oh," she said, surprised.
"I never left."
She didn't rise at the accusatory tone. "Miriam told me you were planning to go back to the gold fields and try your luck again."
"Out of desperation," he said, "Miriam talked me out of it."
Angel's face softened. "Yes, I suppose she would. Miriam was always saving a soul. How is she?"
"She's going to have a baby this summer."
He watched the color ebb from Angel's face and then come back slowly. "Thank God."
"Thank God?"
She smiled, but it was sad and wistful. He had never seen her smile like that before. He wished he knew what she was thinking. "That's wonderful news, Paul. Michael must be very happy."
"Michael?" He gave a soft laugh, confused. "Well, I suppose he is."
He felt driven to say, "He's been doing real well for himself the last few years. He bought some more land and a small herd of cattle last spring. He put up a bigger barn this fall." She didn't have to know she had taken half his heart with her when she left. Michael still had faith in God, and God would find him a good wife. He didn't expect Angel to smile at his news, but she did. She didn't look the least bit surprised. She looked relieved and happy. "Michael will always do well." The heartless witch. Was that all she could say? Didn't she know how much Michael loved her, how much it had ripped him up when she left? "And you, Paul? Have you worked things out with him again?" He hated her for the reminder of what had happened. He hated her so much he had the taste of steel in his mouth.
As soon as you left, things went back to the way they were, he said, knowing it was a lie. Michael had never held a grudge. He was the one who couldn't let it go. Nothing was the same. She was still a wall between them. I'm glad, she said, and looked it. He's always loved you, you know. He never stopped. She saw his expression and changed the subject. You can help him build an addition on the cabin. He'll need one now. An addition? What for? With the baby coming, she said, he and Miriam will eventually need more room, and there will be more children in time. Michael always told me he wanted lots of children. Now he will have them. Paul couldn't breathe. He felt cold and sick. Angel frowned. What's wrong? He saw the truth, and the feeling in the pit of his stomach was nothing to the lump of pain in his chest. Oh, God. Oh, God, is that why she left him? He could feel Miriam's presence and hear her words. You never understood her, Paul. You never even tried. Miriam, with tear-filled eyes. Maybe if you had tried just once, things might have been different. Amanda would never let me inside, not completely. I don't think she ever let anyone know how much pain she felt, not even Michael. Maybe you could have tried to help her. Miriam standing firm before his scorn. I never knew Angel. I only know Amanda, and if it weren't for her, I never would have had the courage to come to you. Miriam, on the day she had come to his cabin. I have to do what's best for you. Angel was searching his face. What's the matter, Paul? What is it? There's nothing wrong with Miriam, is there? Miriam is my wife, not Michael's. She drew back, stunned. Yours? Yes, mine. I don't understand, she said shakily. How can she be your wife? He couldn't answer. He knew what she meant. How many times had he thought he wasn't good enough for her? She was just right for Michael. He had kept thinking that all the while he had fallen in love with her himself. He had been convinced right up to the day she had come to him in his cabin. Angel, Michael's still waiting for you to come home. Her face went deathly white. It's been over 3 years. He can't still be waiting. He is. Paul's word struck her squarely in the chest. Oh, God. She shut her eyes for a moment. She stood and turned away. She pushed the lace curtain back to stare out the window. It was raining. She couldn't breathe past the pain in her chest. Her eyes were on fire. Paul saw the way her hand clutched the curtain until her knuckles were white. I think I understand, he said bleakly. You figured if you went away, he would turn to Miriam. Eventually he would fall in love with her and forget about you. Isn't that it? Hadn't he expected that to happen as well? Hadn't the possibility torn at his guts? He would have. She didn't even have to say it, if you hadn't interfered. Once, Paul had said to Miriam that he didn't think Angel had the capacity for pain or love. Those words came back to taunt him now. How could he have been so wrong about her? When she turned and looked at him, he was ashamed. Miriam is perfect for him, Angel said. She's the sort of wife he needs. She's pure and intelligent and tender. She has a tremendous capacity for love. He heard so much more than words this time. That's all very true, but Michael loves you. He wants children, and Miriam could have given them to him. They understand one another. Because they're friends. Her eyes flashed. They could have been more. Maybe, he conceded, facing his own selfishness. If I'd had the courage you did, and if I'd left, I didn't. I couldn't. Until this moment, he thought it was because he loved Miriam too much, but he saw clearly now that he had loved himself more. Angel had understood a higher quality of love. Sacrifice. Leaning forward, he put his head in his hands. Now he knew why Miriam had been so insistent that he be the one to find her.
"I was wrong," he groaned. "I was wrong about you the whole time."
His vision blurred. He looked up again.
"I've hated you. Hated you so much I..."
He broke off, unable to say more. Angel sat down behind the desk again, saddened.
"You were right about me in a lot of ways."
Her words only confirmed what he now knew. He gave a bleak laugh.
"I never even came close, and I know why. That day on the road, I knew you were right. You were right. I betrayed him."
Her eyes filled.
"I could have said no."
"Did you know that then?"
She didn't speak for a moment.
"Some part of me must have known. Maybe I just didn't want to. Maybe it was my way to draw your blood. I don't know anymore. It was so long ago. I never wanted to think about it again, and then every time I saw you, there it was. I couldn't get away from it."
She remembered the darkness in which she had lived. She remembered all those months that Paul had stayed away, and how his absence had hurt Michael. She could imagine Paul's pain at the separation as well, and his shame, and the horrible guilt of it all. Hadn't she kept company with her own? It was on her head. She had allowed it to happen, for whatever reason. What did it matter now? She couldn't cast blame on anyone but herself. The choice had been hers. She had never even thought of consequences. The repercussions had been like a stone flung into smooth water. The splash, then the widening circles. It was a long time before the water was smooth again, and the stone was always there, lying cold and hard in the silent pool. Michael, Paul, herself, ruptured souls desperate to be put together again. The torment and rift between Paul and Michael had grown wider, not because Michael couldn't forgive, but because Paul couldn't forgive himself. Wasn't that just what she had felt most of her life? That everything that had ever happened to her had somehow been her fault, that she was guilty even of being born. She had learned in the last few years that she wasn't alone in those feelings. She heard them every day from other women who had experienced the same abuses she had. Forgiving others for what they had done to her had come far easier than forgiving herself. There were still moments of struggle. Her mouth trembled.
"Paul, I'm so sorry for the pain I've caused you. Truly, I am."
He sat for a long time, unable to speak, thinking of all the time and all the persecution she had endured, from him, and now she was apologizing. He had plotted her destruction and destroyed himself in the process. From that time, he had been consumed by hatred, blinded by it. "I have been insufferable, and self-righteous, and cruel." The revelation was bitter and painful, but a relief, too. There was an odd sort of freedom in standing before a mirror and seeing himself clearly, for the first time in his life. If it hadn't been for Miriam, what would he have become? Loving her had softened him. She had seen something in him he'd never imagined anyone but Tess could see. And she'd seen something in Angel he couldn't. He had wondered at it, but had stubbornly held to his own convictions. Michael's wife had always been Angel to him, the high-priced soiled dove from paradise, and he had always treated her accordingly. Now that he thought back, he couldn't remember one time when she had defended herself. Why hadn't she? He knew the answer to that as well. She had just given it to him when she said he was right about her. It hadn't been disdain or arrogance that had kept her silent. It had been shame. She believed everything he said about her. She believed she was soiled and unworthy, fit only to be used. And I helped convince her. I filled the role Michael refused to play. Remorse overwhelmed him. It hurt to look at her.
It hurt even more to see the truth that he was greatly to blame for Michael's pain as well. If he had reached out just once, as Miriam had said, maybe things would have been different, but he had been too proud, too sure he was right. "I'm sorry," he said. "So very sorry. Can you forgive me?" She wondered if he knew tears were pouring down his face, and she felt a sudden inexplicable warmth toward this man. Michael's brother, her brother. "I forgave you a long time ago, Paul. I left the valley and Michael of my own free will. Don't lay blame for that on yourself." She leaned forward, her hands clasped tightly on the desk blotter. "Let's leave all that behind us, please. Tell me everything that's happened since I left." She smiled slightly, teasing him gently. "Especially how a man like you ever managed to win a girl like Miriam." He laughed for the first time in months. "God only knows," he said, shaking his head. He sighed heavily and relaxed. "She loves me. She told me she knew the first time she met me she was going to marry me." Talking about Miriam made the warmth come flowing back. "I'd watch her and want her so much, and find every kind of reason why I wasn't good enough to kiss the hem of her skirt. Then she came to me one dawn in my cabin. She said she was moving in with me, and set about convincing me how much I needed her. I didn't have the strength to send her home." Angel laughed softly. "I can't imagine Miriam being that bold." "She told me she learned courage from you." He hadn't known what she meant then. Now he did. Angel had loved Michael enough to leave him when she thought it was in his best interest. Miriam had come to him for the same reasons. If she hadn't, he would have gone back to the gold fields and drinking and spending time in the brothels, and he probably would have died up there with his face in the mud. "Miriam sent me to find you. Amanda, I want to take you home." He meant it. Amanda. Her throat closed, and she smiled. Another burden lifted, and she was grateful. But it wasn't that easy or simple. She couldn't let it be. "I can't go back, Paul. Not ever."
"Why not?"
How much did he have to know to understand and become her ally? "There's a lot about me you still don't know."
"Then tell me."
She chewed on her lip. How much was enough? "I was sold into prostitution when I was 8, she said slowly, staring down at nothing. "I never knew any other way of life until Michael married me." She looked at him again. "And I never understood him, not the way he hoped I would. I can't change who I was. I can't undo the things that happened." Paul leaned forward. "You're the one who still doesn't understand, Amanda. There's something I didn't even comprehend until now, because I was too stubborn and jealous and proud. Michael chose you. With all your past, with all your frailties, with everything. He knew from the beginning where you came from, and it didn't make any difference to him. There were plenty of women back home who would have jumped at the chance to marry him. Sweet, sensible virgin girls from God-fearing families. He never fell in love with any of them. He took one look at you, and he knew. Right from the beginning. You. No one else. He told me all that, but I thought it was sex. Now I know it wasn't. It was something else. A crazy accident. I think it's because he knew how much you needed him." She shook her head, not wanting to hear it, but Paul was determined. "Amanda, he bought you out of bondage with his own sweat and blood, and you know it. Don't tell me now you can't go back to him." It hurt too much because she still loved and needed him. Sometimes she thought she would die without the sound of Michael's voice. She would close her eyes and see his face, and how he walked and how he had smiled at her. He had taught her how to play and sing and rejoice, things she had never known. And the sweetness of those memories was agonizing, the separation unbearable. Sometimes she tried not to think about him at all, because the pain was so great. But the hunger for him was always there, the endless, aching hunger. Only he had opened himself to be used in her life by Christ. Through him, Christ had been able to fill her until she was overflowing. Michael had always said it was God. Now she knew that was true. And the knowledge that he'd been the bridge between her and her Savior only made her long for Michael all the more. She couldn't allow herself to think of all that. She had to think of what was good for him, not of what she wanted for herself. She had purpose now and satisfaction in her life. She wasn't plagued by nightmares and self-doubt. At least, not until now. And she had to tell Paul the complete truth so he would understand. "I can't have his children, Paul. Never. Something was done to me when I was very young, to make sure." She had to stop and look away briefly before she could go on. "Michael wants to have children. You know that. It's his dream." She faced him again. "Can you understand now why I can't go back? I know he would take me back again. I know I would still be his wife. But it wouldn't be fair, would it? Not for a man like him." She struggled to control the tears that were so often near the surface lately. She would not give in. She couldn't. If she did, she would cry until she melted away into nothing. Paul didn't know what to say. "Please," she said, "when you go back, don't tell Miriam you saw me. Say anything. Say I left the country. Say I died." He cringed inwardly, hearing his own thoughts come back to haunt him. "Please, Paul. If you tell her, she would only tell Michael, and he would feel he had to come and get me again. Don't let him find out where I am." "You needn't fear that. He told Miriam he wouldn't drag you back this time. He said it was your decision, that you had to come back on your own, or you'd never really understand that you were free." He wanted more than anything now to convince her she had to come home again. "Did you ever tell him you couldn't have children?" "Yes," she said quietly. "What did he say?" She shook her head, dismissing it. "You know Michael." "Indeed he did." He stood up and put his hands on the desk. "He married you, Amanda, for better or worse, for as long as you both are alive, and that's how long he'll wait for you. And past that, if I know Michael, if you only knew how much he's hurting—"
"Don't."
"You know him. Did he ever give up on you before? He won't give up waiting for you now. He'll never give up." She shook her head, pale and distraught.
"I can't go back."
Paul straightened. He didn't know whether he had given her something to think about or just caused her more pain. "I've said all I can. It's up to you, Amanda. Just don't take too long making up your mind. I miss my wife." He wrote down the name and address of the hotel where he stayed the night before. "I'd like to leave by 9 tomorrow. Send word what you decide." He picked up his pack and shouldered it. "What is this place anyway? A boarding house?" She looked up at him, pulled back from her dilemma. "In a way, it's a home for fallen women. Women like me who want to change their lives. We've been very fortunate. Several wealthy citizens gave us financial help." The man at the bank, Paul thought. "God forgive me, what a fool I've been." "You started it, didn't you?"
"Not all by myself. I've had a lot of help along the way."
"What do you teach them in there?" He nodded toward the big room through the door and down the hall.
"Reading, writing, and ciphering, cooking, sewing, how to run a small business. As soon as they're ready, we find positions for them. We've developed a way to accomplish that with the help of several churches."
Father Patrick had been to see her often. Some Catholic priests were a lot like Michael, devoted to God, humble, patient, and loving. She hesitated.
"Magdalena is one of the things I need to think about, Paul. They need me here."
"No matter how good a cause, it's just an excuse now. Pass the torch to someone else. That tall lady with the laughing eyes looked like she could take care of things." He went to the door. Your first obligation is to Michael. He had said all he could. I'll wait until noon tomorrow at the latest. Then I'm going home.
Angel sat for a long time thinking after he left. The sun went down, and she didn't light the lamp. She remembered sitting on the hill a mile from the farmhouse and Michael saying, "This is the life I want to give you." And he had. How could he know what he had done for her? How could he even guess that her life was new because he had shown her the way to live? Paul thought she had gone back to prostitution. What if Michael believed the same thing? She couldn't bear for him to believe that. It would make everything he had ever done for her meaningless, and it had meant everything. God, was I wrong? Should I go back? How can I face him again after all this time? How can I see him and walk away again? What do you want me to do? I know what I want. Oh, God, I know. But what do you want me to do? She held herself and rocked, biting her lips and fighting the grief. How can I not say thank you to him? Did I ever really explain what he did for me? What have I ever given him back but grief? But she had gifts to offer him now. She had stood firm against Duke. She had walked the road Michael had taught her. Because of it, people had trusted her and backed her in building the House of Magdalena. She was doing good with her life, and it was all because of him, because of what she had seen in him. "Seek, and ye shall find," he'd read to her, and she had. Maybe if she'd found a way to tell him, it would give him peace.
"Sarah, beloved."
"God, I won't ask for more than that." She closed her eyes tightly. "I won't ask you for more."
Classes were long over when she left the office. The girls had finished supper and retired to their rooms. Angel went up the stairs. She saw light beneath Susanna's door and tapped.
"Come in."
Angel entered.
"What's happened?" Susanna asked, getting up from bed and coming to her. She took her hands. "You look so pale."
"We missed you at dinner. Who was that man?"
"A friend, Susanna. I want you to run Magdalena for me."
"Me?" she said, astounded. She looked less assured than Angel ever remembered. She let go of her hands and stepped back. "You can't mean it. I couldn't."
"I mean it, and yes, you can."
Susanna was more than capable of handling things. She just didn't know it yet. She would walk through the fire and come out the other side even stronger than now. Angel was suddenly very sure of that.
"But why? Where are you going?"
"Home," Angel said. "I'm going home."
Chapter 34. From Hosea, Chapter 6, Verse 1. Come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn, that he may heal us. He has stricken, and he will bind us up.
Paul! Miriam flew from the cabin to throw her arms around his neck, weeping in joy. Oh, I've missed you so much! She kissed every part of his face she could reach.
He laughed and kissed her mouth, feeling the pieces inside himself come back together again. He was home. All the tension of the past weeks, the guilt of the months before, evaporated. She pressed closer to him, and other emotions surged through his body. Having Miriam in his arms again was heady indeed. When he released her, she was flushed and breathless. She had never looked so beautiful to him. He looked her over and saw her pregnancy was beginning to show.
"My, how you've grown," he said, rubbing the bulge.
She laughed and put her hand over his.
"Did you find her?"
"In San Francisco."
His heart lightened even more at the look in Miriam's eyes. She smiled up at him tenderly.
"I can see things worked out."
She looked relieved and delighted. Her anger with him was completely forgotten.
"Where is she?"
she asked, looking past him.
"She wanted to sit for a few minutes up the road.
I think she's preparing herself for an ordeal. She's hardly said a word the last 2 days traveling. She's changed, Miriam. She searched his eyes and smiled.
So have you, my love. You've made your peace with yourself, haven't you?
I had help along the way.
Miriam saw Amanda then, and left him standing while she ran up the road, arms outstretched, to meet her. The two women embraced warmly, and Paul smiled. When Miriam let go, she was chattering on gaily, tears streaming down her cheeks. Angel looked pale and strained, not at all at ease. She glanced toward Michael's land, and Paul understood why. Amanda was afraid to face Michael after all this time.
Lord, make it right for her and Michael. Please. I'd see it as a personal favor.
I'll bring water up, and you can have a bath, Miriam was saying, looping her arm through Amanda's as they walked toward him. I made bread this morning, and there's soup simmering. You must be famished after your trip.
I can't stay, Miriam.
Miriam stopped.
You can't? But why?
I have to go to Michael.
Well, of course you do, but you can rest a few minutes and wash up. We can talk it over.
I can't, Angel said. If I wait any longer, I may not be able to go at all. Her smile was weak.
Miriam searched her face. She glanced at Paul and then back again. She hugged her tightly.
We'll walk with you.
She beseeched Paul with her look.
Sure we will, he agreed readily, and Angel nodded.
Now that the moment was at hand, they were all afraid of what would happen.
Just how long was Michael's patience? Worse, would he be angry with them for interfering and taking things into their own hands? Or had they been doing God's will all along?
When they were within sight of Michael's homestead, Angel stopped.
I have to go the rest of the way alone, she told them.
Thank you for coming this far with me.
Miriam looked ready to argue. When she looked to Paul to agree, he shook his head. Amanda was right.
Angel kissed Miriam's cheek and hugged her.
Thank you for sending Paul, she whispered.
They watched her walk away alone. Paul put his arm around Miriam's shoulders and watched Amanda. He remembered how Angel had always walked, head high, back straight. Arrogance, he had thought. But it had been pride that had held her together for so long, and pride that had kept her separate. She had a quiet grace about her now, a beautiful humility.
She's afraid, he said quietly.
She's always been afraid, Miriam said, leaning against him. Do you think we did the right thing, Paul? Maybe we should have let her come back on her own.
It was the first time he had heard Miriam uncertain. She wouldn't have. She had made up her mind. She thought you were married to him.
Because she told me to. She said she wanted me to have his children.
She looked up at him, her eyes swimming with tears.
But I only wanted yours.
Oh, my love, he held her close. We'll have to remember the man Michael is.
Yes.
She put her arms around him.
It's really up to them now, isn't it?
Paul turned her face to him and kissed her with all the longing he had felt during the weeks of their separation.
I don't know what I'd do without you.
She reached up and pulled his head down to kiss him back.
It was a lover's kiss this time.
Let's go home.
Angel could see Michael working in the field. She was so full of conflicting emotions, she could hardly bear it. Self-doubt, self-hatred, struggling pride, and fear. All the things that had sent her running so long ago, and some that had kept her from going to him before now. She couldn't allow them to stop her again.
Oh, God, give me strength, please. Walk with me, help me. I don't know if I can go through this.
I have not given you a heart of fear.
She knew the moment Michael saw her.
He glanced up as she was crossing the meadow. He stood very still, staring at her in the distance. "I mustn't cry. I mustn't." She kept walking toward him. He didn't move. Doubt stirred again, but she fought it down. She wanted to shed all the barriers that had kept her from him, all those months of defiance and fear and uncertainty. She wanted to discard the horrible memories of her childhood and the guilt she had taken on herself for things she had been powerless to stop. If only things had been different. She wanted so desperately to be clean for him, to be new. She wanted to please him. She would give the rest of her life to that end if he would let her. She wanted to strip away her past. Oh, if she could only be Eve again, a new creature in paradise, before the fall. With trembling hands, she removed the trappings of the world. She dropped her shawl and took off the woolen jacket. She worked at the tiny buttons of the shirt waist. She shrugged it off and let it drop as she walked. She unhooked her skirt and let it slide down over her hips and to the ground. She stepped out of it. Without faltering, she walked toward him. She had never said all she should have. He didn't know what he had done for her. He had been like the sea, sometimes storm-cast, with waves crashing against a cliff wall. Other times he was like the steady, lapping surf. Always he had been like the tide, washing her shore, reshaping her coastline. "Lord, no matter what he does or says, I have to thank him. He was always your good and faithful servant, and I never thanked him. Not enough. Oh God, never, never enough." She removed the camisole and slips, the corset cover and corset and pantalettes. With each garment she removed and dropped, she cast away anger, fear, and her blindness to the multitudes of joy in life, her own desperate pride. She had one single abiding purpose, to show Michael she loved him, and she peeled away the layers of pride one by one until she was humbled by her own nakedness. Last of all, she stepped out of her thin leather shoes and drew the pins that held her hair. As she came close, she saw the gray at his temples and the new lines in his beloved face. When she looked into his eyes, everything she felt spilled over. She had always known her own pain and loneliness, her own need. Now she came to face his. Oh, what had she done to him in denying her love, in turning away? She had played God and done what she thought best for him, and all she had done was cause him pain. She thought he was too strong to be hurt, too wise to wait. How much had her martyrdom cost him? All her carefully planned words fled. So many words to say a simple, heartfelt thing. "I love you, and I'm sorry." She could not even speak. The tears that had been frozen inside her all her life came, and the last bastion melted away in a flood. Weeping, Angel sank to her knees. Hot tears fell on his boots. She wiped them away with her hair. She bent over, heartbroken, and put her hands on his feet. "Oh, Michael, Michael, I'm sorry. Oh, God, forgive me." She felt his hand on her head. "My love," he said. He took hold of her and drew her up again. She couldn't look into his face, wanting to hide her own. Michael took off his shirt and put it around her shoulders. When he tipped her chin up, she had no choice but to look into his eyes again. They were wet like hers, but filled with light. "I hoped you would come home some day," he said, and smiled. "There's so much I have to say, so many things to tell you." He combed his fingers into her flowing hair and tilted her head back. "We have the rest of our lives." She knew then that she had doubted he would forgive her again, but he already had. She could live with him forever and not know his depths. "Oh, Lord, thank you. Thank you." She went into his arms, spreading her hands on his strong back, pressing herself as close as she could, her gratitude so strong she could hardly bear it. He was warmth and light and life. She wanted to be flesh of his flesh, blood of his blood, forever. Closing her eyes, she inhaled the sweet scent of him and felt she was finally home again. She thought she had been saved by his love for her, and in part she had been. It had cleansed her, never casting blame. But that had only been the beginning. It was loving him in return that had brought her up out of the darkness. What can I give him more than that? I would give him anything. Amanda, Michael said, holding her tenderly. Terza.
Sarah, came the still soft voice, and she knew the one gift she had to offer. Herself.
Angel drew back from Michael and looked up at him.
Sarah, Michael. My name is Sarah. I don't know the rest of it, only that much. Sarah.
Michael blinked. His whole body flooded with joy. The name fit her so well, a wanderer in foreign lands, a barren woman filled with doubt. Yet Sarah of old had become a symbol of trust in God and ultimately the mother of a nation. Sarah. A benediction. Sarah. A barren woman who conceived a son. His beautiful, cherished wife who would someday give him a child. It's a promise, Lord, isn't it? Michael felt the warmth and assurance of it enter every cell of his body. He held out his hand.
Hello, Sarah.
She looked endearingly confused as she placed her hand in his. He shook it and grinned down at her.
I'm very pleased to meet you, finally.
She laughed.
You are such a crazy, crazy man, Michael.
Michael laughed with her and pulled her into his arms to kiss her. He felt her arms around him as she kissed him back. She was home for good this time. Not even death would part them. When they drew breath, Michael swung her around and lifted her above him joyously. She threw back her head and spread her arms wide to embrace the sky, tears of celebration streaming down her cheeks. Michael had once read to her how God had cast a man and woman out of paradise. Yet for all their human faults and failures, God had shown them the way back in.
Love the Lord your God, and love one another. Love one another as he loves. Love with strength and purpose and passion, and no matter what comes against you, don't weaken. Stand against the darkness and love. That's the way back into Eden. That's the way back to life.
Epilogue. From the 30th Psalm, verse 5.
Weeping may last for the night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. Sarah and Michael shared many happy years together. On their 7th anniversary, their prayers were answered with the birth of a son, Stephen. Stephen was followed by Luke, Lydia, and Esther. Miriam and Paul also remained happy and had 3 sons, Mark, David, and Nathan. Both families prospered and remained lifelong friends. Together they built a community church and school and welcomed many more settlers to their valley. Susanna Axel remained at the house of Magdalena until her death in 1892. With her help, dozens of young women once trapped into prostitution crossed the threshold to better lives. Several married well and became leading citizens. Though Sarah's family grew rich and famous, eventually including doctors, ambassadors, missionaries, and even a much-decorated veteran of San Juan Hill, she returned for 1 week each year to the House of Magdalena. As long as she was physically able, she walked through the Barbary Coast and down to the docks, talking with young prostitutes and encouraging them to change their lives. When asked why, she said, "I never want to forget where I came from and all God has done for me."
She frequently returned from the docks to the house of Magdalena, holding an angel by the hand. After 68 years of marriage, Michael was laid to rest. Sarah followed within a month. According to their wishes, only simple wooden crosses marked their graves. However, a few days after Sarah's burial, an epitaph was found scratched into her marker. Though fallen low, God raised her up an angel.
The End. You've been listening to Redeeming Love by Francine Rivers, narrated by Kate Forbes. In the late autumn of 2000, Recorded Books was in the final stages of production of Redeeming Love. We arranged to speak with the author near her home in Santa Rosa, California. Interviewer Donna Carnahan had the chance to find out more about Francine Rivers and her writing.
Today we're speaking with Francine Rivers, best-selling inspirational author. Francine, people who just finished listening to your book, Redeeming Love. I understand this was your first Christian novel.
It is my first Christian novel, and it is actually my favorite novel of all the books that I've worked on. It was basically my statement of faith, the story from Hosea from the Bible. When I had read that book, it just completely changed my life and how I view God.
Before that, you had been writing...
I was writing in the secular market. I was writing steamy historical romances, which I don't recommend.
Right.
And I've got the rights back to all of those, and they're no longer in print. But I had been writing for a number of years before I became a Christian. And then when I did become a Christian, I couldn't write for about 3 years. And during that time, we were doing home Bible studies with our pastor. And that's when we studied the minor prophets. And that was the first time I'd really read Hosea. And that was what made the difference. It helped me understand how much God loves us, that he would take us back over and over again, no matter what sin we've done.
Is this one of your favorite stories in the Bible, Hosea and Gomer?
Yes, it is. Because it really shows, it was actually a story that was written for the nation of Israel to show them that they were turning away from God, and God was using the prophet Hosea as an illustration of God's love for the nation of Israel. But I took it on a more personal level, that Hosea was God representing his love for each person, and that he woos us and he courts us, but it's really up to us to turn and see him and be faithful to him and love him back.
I know that in this book you've dealt with some pretty real issues, which much Christian fiction shies away from. Do you feel that God led you to write about these issues in this book?
I believe that he did, because I was writing, as I was saying before, the real steamy historical romances which focus on the love between a man and a woman. I believe that God just took the writing away from me for a while because it was an idol in my life. I really got my identity from my writing, and it seemed more important to me than anything else. And by not being able to do it for 3 years and then spending that time in the Word and then having that story hit me so hard, it was like God saying, this is the love story I want you to write for the people that have been following your career before. I want them to see the difference between what the world says love is and what real love is.
I was reading a quote from one of your readers that said that God used these stories to help me through times of anguish. I'm sure you've heard from many people after finishing this book. Do you have any other stories you'd like to share with your listeners?
I think this book strikes people because it does define Mr. Right. You know, it defines God's love and how sacrificial his love is for us. And I've received more letters for this one book than I have with all my other books combined. And I think it's because it's an allegory about God's love for us. I receive letters from women who've been prostitutes, women who are in prison, women that are just struggling with issues that they haven't been able to overcome. It's used in battered women's shelters in some places. It's used in some of the prisons here in California as a way to teach the women that the Lord loves them and that they can turn their lives around and have a different life.
It also appeals, though, to Christian women. You must have heard from a lot of people who don't have the graphic experiences or the horrifying experiences that Angel had, but who just feel a relationship with this character of Angel.
Well, the Christians that have written me, surprisingly, seem to identify with Paul. They will say that they had never thought about it in that way, and it gives them a different view of people who really have been through heavy-duty things, and we have a tendency to look at them from the outside and think, oh, well, look what they've done to themselves, and not really understand that many things may have been done to them that made them hard. as in the case of Angel, it does deal with child abuse and a lot of horrendous stuff early in her life. Those experiences are happening across our nation. So I think for Christians, it helps them to have more empathy for the people that they may not understand.
About how long did it take you to write Redeeming Love, and did you do your own research when you worked on this book?
It took me about a year. All the books that I'd been writing previously had to do with California history, and so I had almost a library built about the Gold Rush, and this book takes place in the Gold Rush. So I used the research that I already had, but the year for me, as far as researching God's Word, is I was spending every day studying my Bible and praying, and I felt like that whole year was just a tremendous year for me spiritually, because I felt I was really in a connection with the Lord and learning what the Word had to say, and then trying to put that into a story in such a way that it wasn't, you know, preaching at people,
right,
but having them experience the emotions that the characters were going through and the doubts and the trials.
Well, it is amazing how God uses your past research and he takes it and brings it into the Christian.
Oh, yes.
Message.
He also brings up things that we've done in our lives that we wish that we could just forget. And he uses that in the storytelling. I think that that's been the wonderful thing for me, that I thought for a while during that 3 years that I was never going to be writing anything again, that God had just decided that that needed to be taken away, and then for him to give it back to me, but to use for a completely different purpose. So when I've been writing books now, I tend to look at my own life and where are my struggles? Where do I have trouble trying to figure out the answers to certain questions like sovereignty, justification, a lot of these big words that we tend to throw around? And the writing helps me to really go before the Lord and study the Word and find answers in the process of writing a book.
Well, it's beautiful because it translates very well, and you don't have to get caught up in the big words when you're reading it, because you've got a beautiful, moving story of how God works in people's lives.
Well, I hope so. That's what I try to do.
Were the Altmans, John, Elizabeth, and Miriam inspired by someone in your life? Someone you know?
I have had just so many people in my life. You know, when you become a Christian and you look back over your life, you can see how God placed so many people right there reaching out to you, and you don't recognize them in that way until you come to the Lord. And then it's like, oh, they were gifts all the way along the line. I have a lot of Altmans in my life. Couldn't even begin to name all of the Altmans in my life, people that have just really reached out and embraced me. The church that I go to now, I remember the first time I walked in, I just felt like I'd come home, because people welcomed me as a part of the family, and I wasn't yet a Christian. And they would turn around and greet me, and they were interested in me. They wanted me to get to know them, to be a part of the family. And I think that's what really began to open my eyes.
How do you feel that God's working in your life today?
I think that he is continuing to teach me. It just seems like there are always questions. There are always things that come up that I'm dealing with, that I know other people are dealing with. And so I use my writing as a tool to find answers in the Word. So I'm constantly taking classes, and I spend time in the Bible each morning before I start to write, because I feel that when I'm writing, I want the scripture to be so natural in the story that if people really know scripture, they'll recognize it. But if people don't, it won't be, oh, there's another verse popping out there. It'll be done in a natural way, so that they're getting truth the same time they're reading fiction.
A seamless kind of approach to it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And that's probably what moves your audience, is for people that aren't familiar with the Bible.
Well, and even for the characters that are not Christians,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you have all kinds of people in the Bible. So even they have a tendency to be speaking things that are in scripture.
Right.
Without realizing what they're doing, of course.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm finishing up a series called The Lineage of Grace, and it's on the women in the first chapter of Matthew.
Mm.
There's Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, and Mary. And there are five very interesting, very extraordinary women that are mentioned in the lineage, and it was not common for women to be mentioned. So I've been doing novellas, and then in the back of the novellas, there is a seek and find section that is designed for discussion, to get together with friends over tea or whatever and talk about what do these women from the past have to do with us today.
Well, I've enjoyed speaking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to pass on to some of the listeners?
Just that I hope that they will not let fiction replace scripture, because there's nothing more exciting than reading the Bible. And fiction is really meant just to whet the appetite for the real thing.
Well, thank you, Francine.
Thank you.
Francine Rivers, author of Redeeming Love, and interviewer Donna Carnahan. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.